welcome, welcome, and welcome back. I feel like saying that a few times because last week, the traditional on Wednesday podcast that has become a sweeping tradition across the nation over the past handful of weeks was put on delay. Technical snafu on my end. This is Chris Habis with Bright Side of the Sun and SB Nation Arizona. As always, I have Jim Kokenauer on the line from Bright Side of the Sun as well. We would have had a podcast on here for you last week, but Jim, I don't know what I did or if this thing just didn't like us, but it just decided to record two amazing podcasts and would not let them save. The world missed out on two pretty amazing takes of a Christmas story for the Phoenix Suns. I think that they really missed out.
Yeah, I liked the recordings we had last week. We went through the Christmas presents that I later posted online, and I thought it was a lot better presented on the podcast than through the story. I thought it was really humorous. We had some nice banter back and forth. But que sera, sera. I hope everybody had a Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, happy and safe holidays. And coming into 2013, my first resolution is to not let the Suns play negatively impact anything in my life. They've been losing for a while now, but some of the apathy has kind of started to settle in. The losses aren't quite as deleterious, not quite as heartbreaking as some years when they're actually good. So I'm still going to follow the team as emphatically as ever, but I'm comfortably numb with the way 2012 ended.
Yeah, and you know what? This team, in their lean years, are a 500 ball club. So you're right. It's one of those things where, as a fan base, I don't think very many people, at least people that are maybe in our age group that have been watching the team for 10 to 15 to 20 years, are used to losing. So, you know, watching this team 10 games under 500, 11 and 21 on the season, kind of a tough go about. And that tough go about started last week after the team reeled off four straight wins. And we were excited. There was actually some excitement going on. They then dropped now what has been six straight games, most of those on the road, actually half and half, basically. And we're going to start it off with that Knicks game, because the last podcast that we were able to do and a lot of the write-ups kind of entail the other three losses or other two losses. So starting with that Knicks game, three games that they lost or that were underneath 10 points, where they had a possession here, a possession there that they could have won, and then obviously the Oklahoma City game where we got taken out back by the woodshed just like the Clippers did to us a few weeks ago. What just overall, just kind of scope this week and what you took away from this team and why this is a six-game losing streak rather than a couple of wins here and there.
Yeah, even prior to that, we had the same kind of mechanic going on because that was the loss to Portland. And that was another close game. We lost that 196-93. And then going into the next week, we had the Knicks loss, which was the late-game heroics from J.R. Smith. Then they lose in Indiana, 97-91. Telfair did a good job covering for Goran Dragic after his spill caused him to miss the game. But it seemed like he ran out of steam right at the end of the game. He played over 40 minutes. And, you know, going further forward from that, they lost another close one, the next game against the Timberwolves, ironically in a game where they had only committed three turnovers the entire game and then can't inbound the ball with two opportunities to try to get off a shot to make that a game at the end, try to put it into overtime, do something there. So that, for me, was the real crux of the issues for the Suns. And that was an issue earlier in the year, and it's just gotten worse as we go along and to the point where we're kind of like expecting, well, what now? What are the Suns going to do to lose this game? You know, it almost seems like it might be more productive if we just turn the game off at the end of the third quarter and we can just pretend that the Suns won the game.
Yeah, and you know what? If you think about it, and this is more of a broad strokes on that Knicks game, but you look at Minnesota and the bad inbound pass from Jared Dudley where he just kind of flailed it just too far ahead to try and get that ball to Goran. It's kind of a forced pass after they had to call a timeout after not being able to inbound the ball. The New York Knicks game was lost on a bad inbounds play where they brought the ball in. Bassey wasn't able to see around Tyson Chandler to the wide-open Gortat. Led to eventually the J.R. Smith three, which another inbounds play that you couldn't have defended any better than they did, but still gave up a shot at the end there and, you know, knocked it down for the win. So, yeah, inbounding has unfortunately been a bad theme this week. And like we talked about with the Oklahoma City game, they got kind of handled in that game, which was as to be expected. And the team is now losing big to really good teams, fighting with scrappy average teams, and for the most part, kind of beating the dregs of the league, the teams that are underneath them. That's just kind of where the team is at, and I feel like I'm kind of repetitive because I said that a few weeks ago.
Yeah, you know, the Knicks game was very winnable because they were without some players. The rest of the week, I mean, the other teams are making plays to win games, and the Suns are making plays to lose games. You know, I thought what was kind of interesting about the week was that we had talked previously, and I had kind of set an over-under at 27 games for a 30-point score, and the Suns actually had two of those this week, and the first one with Dudley and his career high of 36, that was actually game 29. So it looks like the 27 mark was actually a pretty good line to set for that. I heard that it went back to 45 games back
yes.
into the 11-12 season.
Yeah, I had been completely irrelevant stat, by the way, just throwing it out there. This stat does not, it's not a mile marker on how good a team is, but the fact that it dated back to game 50 of a 66-game season last year when Shannon Brown had 30 and a loss to San Antonio, that was the last time they had a 30-point score before Dudley exploded for 36, and then Scola this week against Minnesota with his 33. So, yeah, it'd been a while, and now all of a sudden it's just happening in volume, but it's not necessarily producing wins.
Yeah, and I don't think that this is like a trend for future games that all of a sudden we're going to have guys exploding for these 30-plus point games, but it is kind of telling, especially when we go up against a team like the Thunder, and I thought the Suns actually did a pretty good job. They made a valiant effort of trying to stay competitive in that game through three quarters, but then you have players like Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook in that game, and it just gives you a very clear picture of exactly what the Suns are lacking.
Yeah, which is that number one guy to go to. And even in Minnesota, when you look at it, Kevin Love had just an astronomically monster game. I think he had a double-double in the first quarter and then tapered off, and Scola was able to be that go-to person, so to speak. But a lot of times, if not all the time, when you think of Louis Scola, you don't think, hey, this guy's going to win us the game. Just throw the ball down to him. We're going to ride him to a victory. His 33 points kept them in the game, and it was just nice to see the explosion out of him. But yeah, they need to get more consistency, and I like what Dudley's been doing. I mean, since being inserted into the starting lineup, he's had, I believe it's four games of 20-plus, including that 36-point explosion, two other games where he had 18 and 19, respectively. He had a single-digit game this week, but it's going to happen every now and then. He's not Kobe, but he's been going out there scoring to a tune of about 18 points a game since being inserted into the starting lineup, and I think that's a good thing for Jared Dudley, and I think it's a good thing for the Suns to kind of get a guy that they view as a leader out there scoring and getting more shots. They're actually finally getting him more shots, which was kind of the problem at the beginning of the season this year.
Yeah, he was the player of the month for the month of December, in my opinion. But, you know, this last week, the entire season has been a macrocosm of this last week. Everything has mirrored the recent play. You know, some of the late losses have, you know, been a little tougher than some of the stuff throughout the season. But what this has shown us is kind of the trend that the season has taken, and the fact that we're talking about Jared Dudley being one of the most stellar, dependable players on the team. If Jared Dudley is your best player, you're not a very good team.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's going to argue with that. And that's not an insult on Dudley either, and I guarantee that's not how you meant it as well. Is he's a very good player, and he says it every single time when we talk to him after a game. I'm a glue guy. I'm the glue of this team. I'm a guy who just needs to do what's needed for us to win. Sometimes it's 36. Sometimes it's, you know, he had 10 assists earlier this week as well. You know, those are the kind of things that he needs to do to be the glue of this team. You never hear about glue guys being the guy, the team's best player. You're not, Udonis Haslem is not the Miami Heat's best player. You know, a guy like Nick Collison is not the Oklahoma City Thunder's best player, but you need guys like that. And that's kind of where Jared Dudley falls in, a glue guy, a leader, a veteran, someone who can play alongside those young studs and horses that end up taking over games at the end, which has been part of the big mishap for the Suns this season in their losses, on the road, doesn't matter what it is. Just the fourth quarter is something that's kind of a death nail. They don't have anyone to give them separation to win the game. And then also they don't have that guy to rely on in games to kind of take over like Kevin Durant did last night, Russell Westbrook has done throughout the season. Those guys just take over games for that team.
Yeah. So, you know, in terms of the season and at the end of last week, so the Suns have 9 straight road losses. They've been out-rebounded in 9 consecutive games, and that's almost a stat that seems like it's a feat in and of itself, that you'd almost have to try to get out-rebounded 9 straight games. They stand at 14th in the West now. They're actually behind the Sacramento Kings now. They're 2-14 on the road for the season, and those 2 wins were against Charlotte and Cleveland. So this is not a very good team. They sit at 11-21, and that mark, I looked it up, poured through some of the seasons on basketballreference.com and did a little bit of research, and that is actually the Suns' 3rd worst start to 32 games in franchise history.
Now, question for you on that, because I think earlier this season I made the point that the team was, I believe it was at the 7-15 mark, it was at the 22-game mark of the season, I believe, where I said, hey, guys, let's calm down. Last year the team was 1 game off of that pace at 8-14. They can potentially rally the wagons there. They can get themselves back on track. And to an extent, last year's team struggled out the gates because they weren't really meeting their expectations and they weren't fulfilling their potential. This team doesn't really have the players, the guys that you're confident in of circling the wagons. Is this a trend? Is this where this team is headed as one of the 3 worst statistical seasons in the history of the franchise, or do you think that they can right the ship?
Yeah, I don't think so. The start that they had where they were 7-8, they were playing some easy teams. So they're 7-5 on the season against the bottom 10 in the NBA, and 5 of those wins are against New Orleans, Charlotte, and Cleveland. They've beaten Charlotte and Cleveland twice each. And Charlotte and Cleveland, so there's like the 2nd and 3rd worst team in the NBA. I guess New Orleans is right there with them. So half of their wins are against like the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th worst team in the NBA. I think it's going to get worse. Looking at the next 10 games ahead, the combined records of those teams coming into today was 172 and 112. 7 of those teams have winning records, and none of them are in the bottom 10 of the league, where the Suns, you know, I guess you could say have been feasting, but they're only 7-5 against those teams. So they're about a 500 team with the bottom 10 in the league. That's where they are. The franchise record for losses, it was in the inaugural season, and they lost 66 games. So obviously the Suns aren't going to, you know, be able to come close to that. But the next worst loss total was 54 games in the 87-88 season, and I definitely see the Suns challenging that for the second worst season in franchise history.
Yeah, and like you mentioned, the month of December was tough. They ended up running off 7 straight losses, got back on track. They've kind of stumbled at the end there. So it was really a tough month for the team. And going forward, it's only going to get harder. I mean, there's a lot of teams that they still have on their schedule that are championship quality and caliber that they have to face. You've already mentioned that they've picked up 4 out of their 11 wins on the season against 2 of the worst teams in the league right now. And one of those wins against Charlotte, they were 6 god-awful Shannon Brown threes made in the fourth quarter away from losing that game. And I'm pretty sure everyone agrees with this. The first 2 of those, if they were misses, Gentry's yanking him, they lose the game. And that was a game where they you know, kind of a freak incident, how they won, great comeback, great story on the road. But You have two road wins against Charlotte and Cleveland, respectively. You have 11 wins, where four of them, almost 40% of them, are against those two teams. So you only have 7 wins against the league, and you have 4 wins against those teams. It's tough when you look at it, because it doesn't matter really what the record is. They're beating up on the teams underneath them. They're struggling against the teams right where they're at, and they're getting just absolutely trounced against the really good teams. And that kind of leads to the point of, I mean, does this team need a shakeup? And we've talked about it with trade comments and stories on Brightside with Marcin Gortat and Jared Dudley. Is it time for a change? And if it is time for a change, what is that change? Because when you look at it, there's not one thing that's going to happen that gives this team 20 wins in the right direction where they're a playoff team. There's a lot of things that need to happen. But if there are going to be changes, I mean, what do you think is that first domino?
Yeah, well, eventually something's going to change. You know, 11 and 21, it looks like it's getting worse. We're all out of games against Charlotte and Cleveland for the season, so there's
no
help there.
That's huge, by the way.
Yeah, because if we could play them more, then it would look a little bit more sanguine up on the horizon. But like you said, I don't think any move is necessarily going to, you know, halt their declivitous descent into the depths of despair of the league. But something's going to have to happen. But, you know, besides the late game shenanigans that have really thwarted the Suns, they have the worst defense in the league. There's no way to sugarcoat that. It's terrible. And, you know, that's not going to get better. I mean, maybe they could move up from like 29th or 30th to like 27th, 26th in a couple of these categories. But 32 games, you're 32 games in and you're this bad, that's pretty much who you are, I think. Now, with making the moves, you know, one of the things that's really kind of disturbing to me, an aspect of the whole debacle this season has become, has been the insistence by the front office that this team is more talented than last year, that they had the playoffs as a goal, that they refuse to be mired in the bottom of the league because of the pitfalls associated with, well, once you get there, it can be hard to get back, and we are there. And so, obviously, that's not where they wanted to be. And I know the front office can't come out and say, you know, hey, we did a crappy job, the franchise is in ruins, we're going to suck. But I don't think that they were just trying to sell false hope with that stuff. I think that's what they kind of felt. And so, obviously, they've failed spectacularly. And now, you know, do we trust this front office that, you know, has pretty much kind of shown themselves to be inept at this point? I mean, I don't know what they could do to turn it around because it's not looking good. But now do we trust them moving forward? Now they're going to make moves that decide future events when they might already have a foot out the door. If the Suns are going to have a top five pick this year, do you trust these guys to make moves? Because I don't. And, you know, what I see, though, is with, in terms of making moves, you know, if we're going to fire the coach, if we're going to make trades, and I've already said that I'm in favor of any trade that will make the team better or worse while returning young prospects and or draft picks, because, you know, I didn't want the team at the back end of the lottery again, and now it looks like we're going to be at the front end of the lottery. And like you said, I don't think that the playoffs are really a goal, so maybe it's time to kind of fire sale the team. And the player that I think will be the first to move and that I'd like for them to move is Gortat.
And he's a guy who, granted, this season he's been kind of a roller coaster. You know, part of that has to do with him. Part of that has to do with playing over the summer in Poland and, you know, leading that group and coming in maybe with adrenaline to start the season, and then fatigue ended up taking over for about a 10 to 15 game stretch. But I mean, you're right. I mean, he's the guy who you would think of the guys that they would trade has the most trade value, as a pretty nice contract as a starting center in this league. And no one's going to argue that on a scenario where he's consistent, that he's a top 10 center in this league right now with just what he does. That's a very valid statement. I don't think you could really poke a lot of holes in that. He's a very good center, but he's been very inconsistent. He kind of does seem a little unhappy here at the moment, whether that's to do with stats or the coaching staff or, you know, missing Nash, whatever it is. He's a guy that I feel you can net something back. And in the proposals we put out there, I mean, those are just two teams. There's obviously what, 27 other teams in the league to look around at that could probably use his services. He's going to end up going to a contender if they make the move. Same thing with a guy like Jared Dudley. I would not like to see Jared Dudley go, by the way. I think that he's a guy that I think is almost the most crucial player on the roster to keep in terms of leadership, consistency, and that kind of stuff to kind of keep the team together. And he's also got an amazing contract, probably a top five contract in the league when he's playing at a high level. So I think you're right. I think the first domino to go is going to be a guy like Marcin Gortat or Dudley. That would be, I'd just flip a coin, one of those two guys, whoever nets the best value. And then the other move that could happen, and it's far too often this happens in sports, and I most of the time think it's the wrong answer, because this time of year, all these NFL coaches are getting fired, would not shock me at all if they decided to just have Alvin Gentry fall on his sword. But we've talked about this ad nauseum. Then who takes over? Who do you hand the clipboard to? I don't necessarily think they have a head coach on that bench to take over the team. So, yeah, I think if a move's going to be made, it's going to be a player trade. The deadline is, I believe we checked this out, it's 23 games from now on February 21st, 1 p.m. our time out here. So they have plenty of time to fish around, to make calls, to find a great deal. And we'll see if they decide to pull the trigger early with the best deal they hear, or if they decide to milk it to the deadline to get as much as they can.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you on the Dudley thing. They control him a little bit longer. His contract is amazing. He's a very good, you know, he's a great role player, but he's, you know, 41% career three-point shooter. He does lots of things. He's got intangibles. He brings just a good winning attitude to the team. You know, Gortat, his contract is, you know, still reasonable now, but it's up in a year and a half. He's going to be in his 30s. So if you're not committed to him, then you really have to move him before the deadline. And in terms of whether it's the coach or a player, if things kind of go the way I think they are going to in the coming weeks, and this team wins maybe two of their next 10 games, and they're sitting here at like 13-29, and the season's just a total loss, you know, I think that, you know, the front office is definitely going to feel some pressure to try to do something, because this is a contract year for them. And unless Robert Sarver has already had a closed-door discussion and told them, hey, your jobs are safe no matter how bad this season gets, you know, no matter what kind of a disaster this turns into, then I think they're going to make a move. Gortat, with him, though, what's kind of annoyed me is, based on partly his petulance, like you had touched on, where there was some infighting with him between him and the coaches. He said a couple things in the media. And then, you know, his performance this year, while there is a little bit of, you know, it seems like a disagreement on exactly where he slotted, I think at least most of us say he's at least, you know, an average starting center, but he's averaging 11 points and 8 rebounds. But between those issues, his trade value is not definitely, it's not at an all-time high.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting. I think that the question that needs to be asked, and this is more or less rhetorical, I don't think we can answer this right now, even though we've kind of tried to, you know, on the website and in conversations, but at the end of the day, it's what do you want back? That I think that's more or less the biggest thing, is if you're trading Gortat, are you just trading him to trade him? Are you getting a second-round pick, an expiring contract, and a young player that may be in the D-League forever and might be a star? Are you trading Jared Dudley for another second-round pick and just another asset in general? I mean, you're not going to get DeMarcus Cousins for Marcin Gortat. Let's just be honest. That's not happening. You're not going to get a top-flight star for Jared Dudley. You put those two guys together, and you might get a middle-of-the-pack guy. You know, you might get a quality guy with some potential. But it's all about what you return. I mean, are they going to trade these guys for picks, for young players that they're going to have to develop? Are they going to trade these guys for veterans to kind of maybe right the ship this season? I think that's the rhetorical question that needs to get pondered over these next 23 games, because I think the fate of Jared Dudley, Marcin Gortat, Lon Babby, Lance Blakes, and Alvin Gentry with the Phoenix Suns organization, it's got a 23-game time bomb on it, and it's going to be decided on February 21st around that trade deadline time. I think all of those people, and they probably know it in the back of their mind, their season is 23 games long in terms of being a Phoenix Sun.
Yeah, definitely. At some point, you got to wonder, though, it's like the tree falls in the forest conundrum. So if the Suns make a trade and nobody really gives a damn, then does it really matter? Because really, all the casual fans have tuned this team out by this point. Dave had written up something about the declining attendance at an all-time low since they opened that building. So, you know, you're right in terms of that. You know, what are you trying to get back? Are you actually trying to maybe get something that you think might help? And I think that would be kind of fatuous at this point. I hope that's not what they're doing. You know, Gortat, if they can get young pieces, a draft pick, you know, a first rounder in 2014, something like that to help. Dudley is still young enough that he could actually kind of be there to mentor some of these young players. So maybe he doesn't fit in quite as well. And then really, like you're saying, as that trade deadline approaches, then do guys like Telfair and Jermaine O'Neal also get shipped out, see what they can get there, whether they can, you know, send one of those guys in the second round or upgrade it to a first or something like that. You know, teams that are in contention, point guards and backup bigs are always, you know, good acquisitions for those types of teams, especially, you know, they have an injury, something like that. They don't want to derail their season. So those guys might be in demand as that date approaches too.
Yeah, and one thing to look forward, as you mentioned, these next 10 games, that I guess one good positive thing out of these next 10 games, it's kind of a split. It's not a seven-game road trip. They have a lot of games at home. More specifically this week, they play three straight home games. So they start the year off with being at home against Philly, being at home against Utah, and then hosting the Memphis Grizzlies before hitting the road to Milwaukee. So in the scope of our podcast timeline, they're going to have three games at home and one on the road before we talk next. And the first game is against Philly. And the reason I bring up the home versus away is something to look at. It's easy to look at the team's overall defense, their overall points per game, etc. But when you look at the team at home, they're basically a plus two margin of victory. They scored 98 to an opponent's 96, basically. So at home, they grind it out. We go back to that under 5 point stat that I pointed out in a column earlier. The team is you know, pretty mediocre at winning games. They're about 500 at that, but they're just a touch under. They can compete and they can win games at home, even with the declining attendance. But when you switch over to the roads, it's just night and day. It's actually pretty just daunting when you look at it. They drop 2 points down to 96, and they give up almost 107 points a game on the road, and they've actually only had four occurrences this entire season on the road where they didn't give up at least 100 points. Four times where they didn't give up at least 100. Three out of those four games, it was 94 or more. So, I mean, really close. They were a couple of shots away. So the defense on the road has been part of the reason why, as you mentioned, they have the worst defense in the league just by watching teams play defense, not by statistics. So being at home for these next three games, they could go 2-10 in the next 10, but at least these next three are at home where they have a little bit more of a comfort zone. And oh boy, do they have motivation against these three teams. I mean, Philly, we know about that earlier this season. Utah, it's a rivalry. And with Memphis, they had another game where it was really close that they won. A lot of motivation with these three games, starting off with Philly. How do you feel this week is going to go? And let's go ahead and start. Let's talk about that Philly game for a minute, because that was a Michael Beasley and one away from being a Suns win on the road.
Yeah. To touch on the dichotomic nature of the Suns at home versus on the road. And on the road, anytime they play, I just expect them to lose. I've gotten to that point where I just, you know, put one in the loss column, and if they actually win another game on the road at some point this season, then that'll be a happy day. But this week actually even touches on that again and reinforces that whole concept, because all three of these teams are teams that they played before earlier this season, and they lost all three games on the road, and they beat Memphis and Utah at home. That Philadelphia game, Holiday went off on us. He had 33 and 13 that game, 33 points, 13 assists. And like you said, we had a chance to win that game. And this is another game where the Suns orchestrated some clever way to avoid winning by Beasley missing the layup. And if I remember that correctly, didn't that layup go like halfway down and then come back out?
Yeah. And you can even argue that he was fouled on that play when he missed that shot, because he did get hit on the arm when he was going down. So, and that might have been the reason why the shot didn't go in, because he had his shot obstructed by the potential foul. So that's why this game, I think they have more motivation than any game this season. Even more motivation when they came home while losing seven in a row and were able to get that win to end the snide. I think this game, they got to have some motivation. They got to have a lot of fuel burning for this one.
Yeah, so they got a chance there. Then they play Utah, and same thing. You talk about the home and road again here, and they went to Utah, and they got smoked, and Al Jefferson just torched us inside, and then Utah comes back here to Phoenix, and we win that game pretty easily. So, you know, playing them at home again, I think you got to, you know, give the Suns a chance in that game. And then we finish out the week. We got Memphis. The last game here was the buzzer beater, I guess not really a buzzer beater, but a game-winning layup by Dragic. And, you know, we played them actually close in Memphis, too, so it seems like maybe for some reason, even though Memphis is a really good team, that something in our style, something kind of gives them fits. Lots of times you'll see that where one particular team or a couple of particular teams are a thorn in another one's side. So, you know, you almost kind of have to say we got a puncher's chance in all three games. But, you know, the way the Suns have been playing, I don't know. It's hard for me to you know, even say that we'll win more than one game this week.
And to go back to the Memphis game, when you talk about the win at home, they took Al Jefferson kind of out of the game in the home game here against Utah, and they didn't take Zach Randolph out of the game, but he didn't have it even near the performance he had where he dominated the Suns in overtime in Memphis. So that was a big part of it. And when you look at the Philly game, and this is something that's another trend that we've talked about, when the Suns played at Philly, it was Drew Holiday that absolutely obliterated them throughout the course of the game. It was a close game in the end, but he was just a monster in that game. Kind of the same way when they were on the road at Utah and Memphis, how one guy dominated them. If they can take him out of the game, which has not been something Dragic has been able to do against the upper echelon point guards, so that's going to be a very interesting, unique matchup there. If they can take him out of the game, maybe that's how they get this win. Kind of the same thing with the Utah and the Memphis ones, but you know, same thing, as motivated as the Suns have got to be for Philly, the Utah and Memphis teams are going to come in here and want to get that win back that they gave up to the Suns when they came here last time. So those teams are going to have the fuel fire burning as well. They hit the road against Milwaukee afterwards. You know, hitting the road is like you said, you don't expect them to win any games on the road. So you're already mentally chalking that one up as a loss. How do you see that matchup going?
Yeah, against pretty much any team, if we're playing maybe one of the rank and file teams in the NBA, like maybe when we go to play the Wizards, I'll give us a chance to win that game. But yeah, I mean, just Milwaukee, they've got a couple guys that can go off, and I think they will. Somebody will have a big game there. Monta Ellis will light it up. For whatever reason, even if they play close, they'll still contrive some kind of way to come out of that game with a loss.
Yeah, and Monta Ellis, the self-pronounced as good as Dwayne Wade. So, I mean, watch out. He might have a Dwayne Wade game against this defense with the way they've been playing. And yeah, I mean, when we head out to Washington, I don't know what Seth is, if he's a good luck charm or not, but shout out to Seth Pollock out there in Washington. Maybe he can rub some last year and previous year Suns magic when they go out to Washington so they don't drop an egg on the road out there. But that's basically the week. I mean, it kind of sounds like you said, getting one at home, losing to Milwaukee, so kind of a 1-3 week is kind of your off-the-cuff prediction for how this week is going to go?
Yeah, I don't see it going good from the way it has been. At least with that one win, we'll break a losing streak and not let that like run into double digits, hopefully. I just thought with what you had said, the Montel was Dwayne Wade thing, so I guess what Wade got suspended for a game last week for, I think, kicking somebody in the groin.
Yeah.
So maybe if Ellis is doing his Dwayne Wade impersonation, he can kick our collective team in the groin that game.
Oh, boy. Yeah, this is now not the Bright Side of the Sun podcast. But I know I'm going to turn around, and I'm actually going to be a little more positive. I think Utah is a very good team, but they're very similar to the Suns in the respect that they don't have a dominant player that can just take over a game. They have better players throughout the roster than the Suns, I think, but they don't have that one guy that can just take over and say, I'm winning this game on a consistent basis. So I think they can win the Philly game, so the snide ends with Philly, because that team is a little shorthanded. They're not playing amazing ball right now. They're actually outside of the playoffs, whereas last time they played, they were actually a top 4 or 5 seed out east, so they've really fallen off. And I think they can beat Utah. I do think that they'll knock off those two teams at home before Memphis comes in and tries to reestablish themselves as a top team out west. And then obviously hitting the road against Milwaukee, former Suns coach Scott Skiles, tough defensive team. Like you mentioned, Monta Ellis and Brandon Jennings can get hot and beat them, and the Suns have had a lot of trouble guarding the screen and roll and guys out on the perimeter getting themselves into the lane. So those two guys could easily have a field day, but they're enigmas in their own right. So we'll kind of see how that plays it out. So I'll go 2-2. You can go 1-3. Either way, the Suns are going to be about 10 games under 500 next time we talk.
Yeah, at a minimum. So coming into the season, I kind of thought that the team was going to do a little bit better than this, and now I've kind of come to the conclusion that they're just pretty bad. So now that I'm kind of piling on, maybe they'll actually reverse trajectory and do something good this week.
Yeah, and the thing is nothing that we're saying is not fair. Nothing that we're saying is not earned. So if this team was 21-11, they'd be earning all the compliments. But right now, they're just not playing great basketball. You remember it back at Media Day when Alvin Gentry said, I basically want people to say about this team when a game ends after, you know, watching us play, man, those guys played hard. They competed. They're tough. I don't care about the outcome. I just want them to say that about this team. I think you can say that about this team, but then again, you know, no matter the outcome, they're 10 games under 500. So I think Alvin Gentry had a spot on expectations for this team. I think the upper management, maybe the players, felt this team was going to be better than they were going to be, but you have to have that feeling going into the season. I think Gentry hit the nail on the head before the team even played a game.
Yeah. You know, the effort, I think, this is sometimes a little bit sporadic. For the most part, though, I agree it's there. You know, you see a couple guys, though, and you get guys out there like Dudley and Tucker, and lots of times it seems like they're playing at a higher speed than the rest of the guys. I don't know. I mean, some of that's just in, like, the DNA, and not to say that the other players aren't trying, but sometimes, you know, they don't look like they're, you know, just really hungry. They don't look desperate. You know, we started off and Beasley was out there and people were kind of kicking him around and now he's not playing and guess what, the team's still bad, so it must not have been his fault. Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, the problem, I don't think this is Gentry's fault and it might, you know, come back to him, but it's just the overall level of talent on the team just absolutely isn't there.
Yeah, it was Black Monday 72 hours ago when you listened to this and Ken Whisenhunt of the Arizona Cardinals was let go. The GM was let go. The coaching staff, for the most part, was let go. But they had an assistant that they like, and they might bring in Andy Reid. Is that a forecast of the Suns' future? That's my parting shot. I'll leave that for you guys out there to listen to and comment on and think. Throwing a lot of rhetorical questions out there for these guys, Jim. Do you have any parting shots?
Yeah, just, you know, look forward to the year. No matter what happens, either the Suns will play a little bit better and give us something there and entertain us, or we're going to have a chance to have our fingers crossed on lottery day, and there's going to be some interesting stuff anyway with the trade deadline, with the coach, with the front office. So either way, it's still going to be fun to watch.
Exactly. Again, Chris Habas, Bright Side of the Sun, SB Nation Arizona, Jim Kochenour, Bright Side of the Sun, Philly tonight. Hopefully the Suns get a win, obviously. Catch you guys next week.